This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the observers gave recommendations. They gave their observations of the process and what they saw and what they noted. And they ended with recommendations for the government, for the CENI, the organization that organizes the election, and to the candidates.
That's our colleague Anastasia Tudish in Kinshasa speaking about a press conference held today by election observers in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Full details coming up.
Also, the UN Security Council discusses Somalia's expulsion of the UN Special Representative, and the brutal killing of an albino man in Malawi on New Year's Eve renews concerns of attacks on people with the rare genetic disorder.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Amid tensions in the DRC, the Catholic Bishops' Conference held a press conference today to call attention to voting problems that could call into question the outcome of the presidential election that had already been delayed 2 years. In addition, the DRC's Independent National Election Commission, CENI, announced it may have to postpone publication of provisional results scheduled for January 6th. Our colleague Anastasia Tudisi is in Kinshasa. She spoke with me about what was revealed at the press conference and what the mood is like on the ground.
Well, basically what was said was that the observers gave recommendations. They gave their observations of the process and what they saw and what they noted. And they ended with recommendations for the government, for the CENI, the organization that organizes the election, and to the candidates. So to the government, they suggest strongly that people who committed violence get sued, to take all measures to do anything and everything necessary so that security is effective where people vote, usually people in the polling centers. And to the CENI, the organization that organize the election, the recommendations were to make sure that the access was made freely and easily to observers and witnesses, to the polling centers, and to make sure that voters are protected. And to the candidates, one of the main recommendations was to stop, to refrain themselves from publishing early results and to refrain from being over triumphant once the results are out.
Now, did they say anything about the postponement of the publication of provisional results for January 6th?
They did not. But yesterday, I interviewed Vital Kamerhe, who is the campaign director of Antoine Tshisekedi, one of the main contenders, one of the main candidates. And I asked him about the election on Sunday, and he said, well, I'm not sure they will actually take place, the results on Sunday. And he said he was not sure the results would be published on Sunday, that more than likely they would happen on Monday or Tuesday. And he said that his camp didn't care. All he cared about was that the result of the election reflects what the voters decided, what the voters chose.
And with that, what are people saying about this election? What's the mood on the ground?
People in the streets, and I speak with them daily, tell me that if the two names they are awaiting, meaning the two names being Tshisekedi and Fayulu, if one of these two is not the winner, there will be blood in the street. And this is verbatim. I'm not, trying to interpret. That's what I hear daily.
Is the internet still down?
Oh, yes. Internet is still down, and some people are saying that it won't be back until after the new president is presented to the Congolese people. Some people say not before the 15th or the 16th, but Lambert Mende, Minister of Communication, said that he would do his best to ask, the authorities to put the internet back. So we don't know.
Also, what is being said of those million or so Congolese who did not get to vote because of various reasons with the Ebola outbreak, conflict, and just logistical problems?
Some people in these areas still voted. Even though their votes didn't count, they still woke up very early in the morning and did the ceremonial, like, did as if their voices, you know, would be taken in account. That tells you how eager people were to vote. There's a lot of anger and disappointment, but also a feeling of helplessness. Once you express your anger and you realize that nothing is changing and your voice is not heard, what do you do?
That was our colleague Anastasie Tudisi in Kinshasa.
Nicholas Haseb, Special Representative of the United Nations Secretary General for Somalia, has been expelled by the Somali government. We have online our UN correspondent, Margaret Bashir, to brief us on the matter. Hello, Margaret.
I'm good, thanks. Happy New Year.
So, Margaret, how unusual was the move by the Somali government to expel a UN representative, accusing him, among other things, of diplomatic overreach? First, give us a brief background on the expulsion.
Sure. So it is a very rare move when a UN official is kicked out of a country. They call it PNG, persona non grata. So it is very rare that it happens, but it does happen. It has happened before. Usually it's over human rights issues. Governments get upset when the UN corrects them or condemns them on human rights. That's often one of the situations that leads to an expulsion. So in this situation, Mr. Haseb, who's only been in Somalia since about October, I think, they're having the presidential election process, and it's been a turbulent time politically. There was this standoff between the federal government and some of the federal member states. There's tensions over the electoral process in Southwest State, which is where this individual, Mukhtar Robo Abu Mansour, was going to participate in the elections. And Mr. Robo is a former al-Shabaab deputy leader. And as everyone knows, al-Shabaab is the main security threat in Somalia. The terrorist group has caused untold chaos and misery for Somalis for years now. And so Mr. Robo was actually arrested last month. The federal government banned him from participating in the Southwest State elections, but the local election body cleared him to run. And so we do see problems between the federal government and the federal member states. You know, they do tend to butt heads on occasion, and so they butted up against over this candidature. So Mr. Haseb raised his detention with the Somali authorities, and that's what set this off. And Mogadishu said he was interfering in their national sovereignty. And today their ambassador spoke in the Security Council during a meeting about Somalia, a regular meeting, not a special meeting about this issue. And he said it's not a transitional government in Somalia anymore. It's a proper government, and we're a sovereign nation, and we have all the rights and privileges of a sovereign nation, and we expect the UN to support us when we're being a sovereign nation. And, you know, listen, you guys, you've said with us that al-Shabaab is bad, and you've put them on a terror list, and you've sanctioned them, and these guys can't assume leadership positions without really robust rehabilitation. And in the past two election cycles, even you've said that they shouldn't run. Anybody with a violent background, it would be a step backward. So that's their position. You know, these guys have caused us a lot of misery, and we don't necessarily want them in the government. Mr. Haseb said that today he was here in New York and he spoke in the Security Council. He only vaguely touched on the issue of his expulsion. I'm pretty sure that's because, we've heard from diplomats that there's still a lot of discussions going on behind the scenes, calls being made from the UN to Mogadishu trying to get him back in. So I think he doesn't want to stir the fire any further. And so he only vaguely touched on the subject in his comments today in the council, and he said politics are complicated everywhere, but especially in a country that's still establishing and finding its way politically. And he noted, without mentioning Mr. Robo by name, but he said his arrest, the arrest of a candidate, marred the process and does not bode well for upcoming electoral processes in other regions or for the 2020 national elections. And he also noted that anyone who's in al-Shabaab, a defector who may be considering moving away from violence and towards politics, might now be deterred from doing so, might decide it's not a good idea because, you know, you could end up getting arrested. So this was his only reference to the situation right now.
That was VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir.
The brutal killing of an albino man in Malawi on New Year's Eve has renewed concerns of attacks on people with the rare genetic disorder, which causes the skin, hair, and eyes to have little or no color. Albinos have been killed in Malawi and other parts of Africa over the false belief that their body parts can bring good luck and wealth. Albino rights activists are demanding authorities do more to end the attacks. Lamech Messina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi police say they are looking for two suspects who broke into 54-year-old Yasini Pirisi house in northern Malawi on New Year's Eve and stabbed the albino man to death. Malawi Police Inspector General Rodney Jose on Wednesday told reporters the attackers killed Piri in front of his 9-year-old son.
It is also reported that they dragged him outside the house, probably to a distance of about 20 meters, and then they chopped off both his hands. They left him battling for his life until he bled to death.
Piri was not killed for any personal dispute or steal from his wealth. He was murdered for his body parts. Albinism is a rare genetic condition that causes skin, eyes and hair to have little or no color. In Malawi and other parts of Africa, some people believe that body parts from albinos, if used in so-called magic potions, can bring good luck and wealth. Since 2013, 26 Malawian albinos have been killed and 130 injured. Habiba Osman runs a United Nations-sponsored program in Malawi trying to dispel the false belief and end attacks on albinos. She tells VOA this latest murder is a blow to their efforts.
It's really very discouraging, disheartening, and horrifying for those, especially us who've been in the forefront conducting, you know, various activities, advocacy activities, but also just, you know, bringing to the attention of stakeholders on the need to protect these people.
Osman says a big problem is bringing to justice suspects who attack albinos or steal their body parts from their graves.
For example, the Daily Times have recorded that, you know, there are 152 cases still pending in court. Things like that will send out a wrong message to the general public, like, ah, okay, so these people can just complain about this. But, you know, not many people are, you know, being taken to task.
The belief in albino body parts having magic is not limited to remote areas or people with low education. Malawian police officers, a medical officer, and a Roman Catholic priest were charged last year over the murder of a 22-year-old albino man. The United Nations warned in 2016 that Malawi's estimated 10,000 albinos face extinction if they continue to be murdered for their body parts. Overstone Kondo was the president of Malawi's Association of People Living with Albinism. He blames authorities for not doing enough to end the attacks and the belief in magic.
We are saying like that because the same challenges were also felt with our brothers and sisters in Tanzania and Kenya. But due to a political will, which was also accompanied by actions, these cases are no more.
Heather Wikintaba is the chairperson of Malawi's presidential committee tasked to protect albinos. He tells VOA the government's efforts have paid off, citing only two attacks on albinos in 2018.
You can never wipe out all evil people from a population out of the 17 million. We are doing everything we can, but there are still some who persist in doing some of these evil things. It doesn't mean that the government is failing. It doesn't mean that the government is not doing anything.
Taba says members of his committee recently went to Tanzania to learn from their efforts to protect albinos by banning witch doctors. He notes Malawi is considering stronger actions to discourage attacks on albinos, including adding the death penalty for those found guilty. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Twenty past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Rwandans say their country's usual transportation problem was worse this festive season, as hundreds have been stuck for hours and even days at Kigali's Nyabugogo National Bus Station, missing buses while going to or coming from celebrations with their families. Travelers and transportation workers say a lack of government planning has contributed to the congestion. Many people this week are still trying to get home this week. Eugene Uimana has details from Kigali.
It's around 8 p.m. at the Nyabugogo National Bus Station. A tired Ivumilia Maria sits on her bag, waiting for a bus to get to her home village in Rusizi District, Western Province. She says, what else can she do? She barely got a ticket for 11 p.m., although she came here at 9 in the morning. But some passengers standing in the long queue say Maria is lucky. She at least has a ticket. This woman says she feels like she should go back home because perhaps she might even lose both money and tickets. She says they have already paid, but they were ordered to stand in this line. And others say they don't know who to ask for information. This man was going to the southern province in Nyanza, but after standing here all day, he's trying to approach every bus that comes, but none of them are the one he can take. He says he's old and tired of standing in the queue, and he's wondering where to sleep. Thousands of Rwandan passengers have been stuck at the station, sometimes overnight, as they have waited to get into buses to get to their hometowns. Many say the problem is worse this year than in the past years, in part because the government determines what routes buses can take, which limits availability. Like millions others around the world, Mukeshimana Claude says it's very important to join the family to celebrate festivities. He says it's sad to have the money but still not be able to go home. He says you have to go home and meet the parents after 1 year away hunting down the money. That's why you are seeing so many persons here in the station. He says, considering this situation, we praise God if he gets the bus. The crowd has not eased since a few days before Christmas, although Elike Ndushabandi, the Rwanda Traffic Police spokesperson, said the government planned to bring in more buses. Dushabandi says the traffic police normally control road safety, but it's a bit imperative that in cooperation with other institutions, they make more buses available to fight against accidents that can be caused when drivers carry more passengers than at home. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Schools in Kenya reopened today for a new term, even as teachers continue to pressure the government to address their grievances over poor working conditions, pay, and irregular transfers. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
A court order issued yesterday suspended a planned teachers' strike that threatened to paralyze learning activities countrywide as children resumed classes for the first term. A judge from the Labor Relations Court directed members of the Kenya National Union of Teachers and their employer, the Teachers Service Commission, to hold mediation talks. But union officials remained categorical that all the issues raised must be addressed. Wycliffe Omucheyi is the chair of the Kenya National Union of Teachers.
We are not going to cede any ground on the issues that we raised. The onus is upon the Teacher Service Commission to ensure that those four issues, ranging from promotions, delocalization, TPAD, and teacher progression, are adequately addressed by the Teacher Service Commission.
Earlier, the government had termed the call for the teacher's strike illegal. Amina Mohamed is Kenya's Education Cabinet Secretary.
And the schools that all belong to government are ready and prepared to receive our learners. And the learners and their parents are also ready to report to school.
The court ruling brought some reprieve to millions of Kenyan parents who looked forward to having their children back to school after a long December holiday. Wilson Sosion is the Secretary General of the Kenya National Union of Teachers.
We want to give a clear account blow by blow. We couldn't even discuss any of the items because they have demonstrated blatant disregard, the intention to sack teachers in the event of a strike. And if you commit yourself to a conciliation process, you don't send mixed signals.
Meanwhile, the court has stopped the Teacher Service Commission from transferring more than 3,000 teachers until February this year to await the outcome of the talks. Lydia Nzomo is the chairperson of the Teacher Service Commission.
In readiness for the first term program, as I have said, teachers will be available to attend to all learners.
A spot check by VOA in Nairobi found that several schools had resumed learning activities by this morning. At the same time, Kenya has announced plans to roll out a new competence-based curriculum in all primary schools starting this term. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Worried about a Boko Haram resurgence, Niger says it has killed more than 280 of the extremists over the past week with air and land strikes near the Nigerian border. Defense Minister Kala Motari said in Parliament last month that Boko Haram was able to reinvigorate itself by overrunning Nigerian military bases, snatching supplies and weapons. The Komadugu Yobe River normally serves as a physical barrier between Niger and Nigeria, but its waters usually recede at this time of year, raising concerns about cross-border attacks. In a statement aired on television, the Niger Defense Ministry said airstrikes have killed about 200 Boko Haram extremists, while its troops killed 87 more. The Niger Army says it also seized 8 canoes and 2 rocket launchers, as well as assault weapons, ammunition, and vehicles. West African leaders met in November to discuss strategy amid a rush of Boko Haram attacks in the Lake Chad area. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.